What's happening, folks? Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, and I am Alex with your other game gurus here, Jared and Josh.
What's up, guys?
Hi.
Sorry, I was in anticipation for our ending statement. I was looking through characters, and I'm sorry, Final Fantasy folks, but if you've ever made fun of a Dune character's name, you should not, because these characters have awesome, hilarious names.
Who's jumping out at you right now?
Zach Flair. Jesse Raspberry.
Yeah, that's Jesse Raspberry.
Sorry, anyway, we'll get into that. I was thinking Zach. Of Duncan Idaho from Dune.
You said Zach Flair. I don't know, that made me laugh.
Is it fair? I don't know.
Yeah.
It looked funny to me, sorry.
Why don't we jump into the news this week? We've got a fair amount. We'll see how that goes. Jared, I think the first thing you mentioned was wanting to talk about the Callisto Protocol. What are your thoughts on that? We saw some new footage in this past month.
Yeah, so, like, everything that we've seen from it gives me more feels of Dead Space 1 the first time I played through it than the remake of Dead Space looks like it's going to give me for Dead Space 1, which is really kind of interesting. But I think part of the appeal of it, and I don't know, you can give me your thoughts on it, but part of the appeal is it's something different and new, but at the same time it's still derivative, you know. I don't know, it looks like everything we've been waiting for in a Dead Space game. It's just not a Dead Space game, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it looks like a Dead Space game. It is the Dead Space game that never happened. Mm-hmm. It's the unapologetic derivative of Dead Space.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any qualms or hidden or anything that he's trying to make it look like it's not Dead Space or any different. This is Dead Space, but I can't call it that because these guys over here own that name.
But it looks like they ramped everything up to 11 on this.
Oh, yeah.
They say the horror is going to be crazier. What I really liked about the presentations that they did for this game was they always had to show one of those instant kill moments with the protagonist. So I think in the demo, he got stuck in some like levers or something and got sucked into it.
Oh, yeah.
Just like you would see like Isaac just get instant killed by something. So
in the most brutal fashion.
I think that EA really... And the studio's working on it. It looks like they're doing a great job, don't get me wrong, but they really have to step it up with this game coming out if they want to impress the faithful of this game. And I think Dead Space, more than anything, it breaks out of the typical survivor horror genre, because I hate survivor horror games. Like, they tough for me to play, but Dead Space, man... In that style, that future kind of gore punk style of survivor horror, I love it.
Yeah.
Like, he's a miner. Like, the suit's not like an army suit. I love the fact it was a mining suit. Those games are just incredible. So
he's an engineer.
Engineer, there you go. Yeah. And I'm interested to see story-wise where this game's going to go, because I find the Dead Space story as a whole to be one of the better video game stories as well.
It's super fun. It's dark, it's twisted, but it's not like your stereotype.
It's grounded though. Like, you can see it's very grounded happening.
While still being a sci-fi thriller, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of a cool
but if you like Alien movies, for instance, I'm a sucker for Alien movies. You'll like games like that. The derelict ship, the hidden danger, stuff like that. Anyway, I know we didn't want to get too far into Dead Space, so this isn't a Dead Space episode. We'll be doing that around December, January, or whatever, when that game drops, but and Callisto. But I did want to just mention, as it's getting closer and they're doing more press on it, it's looking so wonderful, but at the same time, so terrifying.
It looks really cool, and it'll be really interesting seeing them drop back-to-back months, because we're going to get Callisto Protocol first, and then we're going to get Dead Space the next month. And I think it's actually really good for Callisto Protocol to come out first.
Yeah.
People are going to be thinking Dead Space, but not have played the newest version of it yet. So they're going to be like, oh, this is...
They'll be comparing Callisto, made by the original guy, to the remake more so than than the other way around. I think that's more fair. But I'll definitely be purchasing Callisto Protocol because it's not going to be a Game Pass game. So I'll be able to, if you don't, Alex, I'll be able to do a comparison. I mean, I'll be living where you guys live, so you can at least come over and check it out if you don't end up buying it.
This is a must buy for me. This is a game, and I don't know, the other Dead Space has had some, well, Dead Space 3 had some really cool co-op. I don't know that they've mentioned anything like that for Callisto, but that would be
spoilers, folks. Alex and I enjoyed Dead Space 3. We know it's not the best in the series or the most beloved, but whenever we talk about that game, for the most part, it will be with nice things to say.
That
so.
Co-op was one of the coolest experiences I've ever played. Enough said. Let's shift on. Josh, why don't you talk a little bit about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth? We got an awesome, one of the best 10 minutes of showcase I think I've ever had. Thank you, Square Enix.
Yeah, it was so the past week or the week before, right?
I think it was like 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a dedicated 25th anniversary showcase for Final Fantasy with all the remakes that are coming out in general for the universe. But we got news finally and a trailer and release window, I guess you could say, for Final Fantasy Rebirth, which is the second part of the remake trilogy, which they also announced.
They confirmed it's a trilogy. Thank God.
And we got a little bit of a glimpse of Cloud and Sephiroth walking in the flashback from Final Fantasy VII back in his hometown. I forgot the name of it, Alex.
Calm?
No, that wasn't Calm.
Oh,
that
you're right. That's where he tells the story. Nibelheim.
Nibelheim. whichever you want to call it. But, So we didn't really get a whole lot of detail, but it still looks obviously graphically the same. And we do have a next winter, quote unquote, release window. What exactly does that mean? That we're unsure. Is it holiday 2023? Is it winter 2023? Is it winter 2024? We don't really know at this point.
I think they came out post that and all but confirmed that it will be the holiday season of 2023.
Okay, so about a year and half from now.
I don't have that source in front of me right now, but I did a lot of digging afterwards and I listened to a couple of podcasts and that's what they were referring to.
Yes, that's huge. They also confirmed that they've started working in some capacity on the third part as well. How far, or if it's just storyboarding at this point, they didn't elaborate. I would venture to guess that it's probably storyboarding and maybe a little bit of modeling, but I don't know for sure. We will have to wait and see.
I'm so stoked for this game. I love this. I loved Final Fantasy VII before they remade it, and now the remake is one of my favorite games of all time as well. So I'm stoked to see this new version or this new continuation, and I'm glad that they've gave us a time frame. You know, it may still not come out until 2024, and at least I have some. You know, Square's not the best with deadlines. Let's just say that. I've got some hope though. So I'm excited about that as well. Jared, you're a big KOTOR fan. I know you don't have a Switch, but would you like to be able to play that game handheld on the go?
I mean, technically I can on my phone.
That's true.
Which is also another janky port.
But you kind of spoiler alert. Sorry. There. KOTOR... No. KOTOR was ported to Switch. It's out. And it's unbeatable, far as we're aware, that there is a broken section of the game towards the end that prevents you from completing the game. And that is very disappointing as a Star Wars fan, very disappointing as a Switch owner and lover.
Well, and Knights of the Old Republic has one of the most loyal followings of any game. I mean, to say something about it, I mean, and it has to do with the Star Wars spin, obviously, but... Alex, Josh, you guys know how much I hate turn-based mechanics. And it's one of three games. KOTOR, KOTOR 2, and Dragon Age Origins are the three turn-based mechanics that I actually enjoyed. So to give you that idea, folks, messing this game up is unacceptable, in my opinion.
Unacceptable.
It's not like it's a graphic-intensive video game. No. It's not like the Switch can't handle it. They just kind of
kerfluffed. I feel like they figured it would be easy, and they just sloppily framed it in whatever Switch's environment, and it's without putting much love into it. And again, this, and we were talking about this before the episode, is it just, it's kind of the theme of developers not being mindful with porting stuff over to new platforms or to updated platforms.
Do you know who did the port? Who handled the port?
Go for it, Josh. For this one.
Aspyr
did?
Yeah. Aspyr. Aspyr.
And I'm not even sure.
They knew that it was broken, I believe, too, when they released it. It sounds like.
I don't think it's so much either, and I need to do more research on this just to be safe, but I don't think it even falls on the studios that are being commissioned for these ports. I think the mainline studios are not giving them enough time and resources, thinking it's going to be an easy thing to do. And that's why I can totally see in my own work time when if I'm given a situation and I know it's not going to work, but they have to have it, I'm sure the studio probably threw their hands up. They're like, it's broken, but here you go. So I can see, we'll do some more research and figure out the actual nuance of it. But in any case, it's very disappointing. Unfortunate.
It's disappointing at the very least, right?
Yeah.
So don't get the Switch version yet. I know if you're a Switch owner out there listening to this and you were really excited to play KOTOR, wait a little bit. Wait for this bug.
If you get it, just realize that you're going to have to wait for an update to make sure that it works. So.
Just be aware that, you know, playing it right now is a pizza when you should have French fried. Yeah.
But if they end up discounting it somewhere because of the issue to move it out and you really love this game and can sit on it for a few months, then by all means, probably a good way to get it.
All right. So that kind of leads us into our next topic a little bit. Dev threats, Jared.
Yes. So this has kind of been a theme, and it's kind of been a theme, at least in America, I could say, where people are unhappy with a product that they like or what's going to be brought forth from a product that they like Obi-Wan Kenobi, the main character. She got backlash because she's black, even though they're in a universe full of aliens. But the instance that brought this up this morning, folks, was the new Monkey Island game, which that game has been around since, man, I was in single digits. So it's been around for years.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic.
Three decades. And it's, those games are fun and beloved, and the new art style is very, Guacamelee-esque. It's kind of the cutout-looking feel, art style, and people saw this, and they started threatening the developers at Lucas Studios or whatever it's called now.
Unacceptable.
And that's completely unacceptable. Same with the God of War remake developers at Santa Monica. Guys, like, they're trying to make, and I'm sorry, I don't want to feel like I'm talking to you directly, but they're trying to do their best to put out a quality game. They're trying to avoid desperately being CDPR that hyped up a game, and it's a game that everybody was excited for and waiting for, and they dropped it literally 2 years before they should have. And instead of doing the hard, responsible thing and saying, guys, this isn't ready, we need another year, 2 years. And I respect what Sony's doing, and they're just saying it's going to be released when it's released. Then that's what it's going to be. Because you very well know, if that game was released and it was broken, you'd be threatening them for that and saying, oh, you should have waited on it. You know, quit wasting our money. So just let these things happen. You don't have control over it. If you really care and want to change it, move to California and apply at Sony Santa Monica and work your way up through the ranks and then employ change that way. But don't threaten developers, folks. It's not going to get you anywhere, and these are people.
There's room for discourse in saying, hey, I'm not happy with the way the new Monkey Island game looks.
I think it looks horrible. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to sit here and threaten a developer.
Don't buy it, right?
Do exactly what...
I'm not going to buy this game if I don't want it, right?
I mean, perhaps the proper way... to evoke change on something like that would, well, yeah, but I mean, I think when it came to changing the appearance of Sonic in the Sonic movies, like the backlash was bad, but it wasn't like people getting death threats, you know?
No, it was, guys, what are you doing? And then they stood back. They're like, what are we doing?
Yeah. And that was a good example of, please speak up. Yeah. But do so kindly, right?
Yeah, let's not, you know.
You can share that, hey, I'm really upset. I'm annoyed that I still don't know when God of War's coming out. That's okay.
But even if you don't like something, work still went into it. Like, hours of work still went into it.
Yeah.
Love, blood, sweat, tears. These people are spending time away from their families. A lot of these companies, granted, they say they're changing their ways. I mean, they're all still crunching. Yeah. So,
unfortunately.
Just protest productively and respectfully, and your message will probably be heard better. But just don't threaten people, folks.
Yeah. You can share your opinion. Just do so constructively.
Right.
And that leads to the next area, because there was some hate in this as well. But it's great news for your Xbox and fans.
I think it's good for video games in general. I
agree. Kojima is officially working on an Xbox project. What do we think about that, guys?
I think it's huge, and I think that the Kojima PlayStation relationship has been so solid for, again, for like 40 years, 30 years, right? And the way that Konami, which is a very PlayStation-associated studio, the way that they kicked Hideo out and the way that went down was so disrespectful based on the fact that Hideo Kojima was Konami. And you can look at it after he left and they released Metal Gear Survive. The studio is a joke, and I'm pretty sure they're focusing on Palinko machines now.
Oh, yeah.
So,
which
is cool. But in any case, the fact that Kojima is branching out, he's working with new hardware, and the way that Phil is and the way that these console wars, even though there's no console wars, but the way that the competition is, I think they're just going to dump trucks of money on him.
Back it up like a dump truck.
So I hope we get something not so weird and artsy like Death Stranding on Xbox. But you know what? If he wants to do something wacky like that, I'm for it. But how cool would it be if it was the, I guess they couldn't because it would be a Konami studio, but like a Silent Hill-esque thing after
spiked. Well, he could do a Silent, like you said.
He could do an esque one, but it wouldn't be that.
I don't know what he's going to do. To be fair, I'm not a huge Kojima fan. I respect the dude. Very creative individual. Has done some wild things with video games. One of my blind spots in video games is the Metal Gear Solid series.
What's funny with me is it's up to the new open world format, which typically I'm an open world shooter guy, but I have not played 5 yet, but I've played every single Metal Gear game up till then, minus like the original one in Zanzibar Land on NES or whatever it was on. I've never played that, but that's exciting news, folks. Kojima's a weird mad scientist within the video game world.
Yeah, he really is. So the next news article headline I'm just going to mention real quick is PS Plus, the new version is out and available in the United States. So I don't have that. I don't have a PlayStation 5 yet, so I'm not worried about it. I don't think Jared has that yet. Josh might have it. Do you have PS Plus, Josh?
I have PS Plus. I haven't upgraded to anything.
I don't think you have to. I think it's just now it's the new PS Plus. But you'll just have the base model.
In the meantime,
whatever I have with the base model, I have. But I haven't. I haven't used it more than what I have currently.
Between now and our next show, just go through the library a couple times in that few weeks period, and let us know how the games look, how frequently they update, because we all know how often they put stuff on. Game Pass. So I think that's going to be the story behind this, is how does it stack up?
Yeah. And what does it look like in the long run? Right. And I think we'll spend more time talking about that as it kind of tends to round out a little bit.
So if you could just let us know your thoughts.
The next thing kind of ties in a little bit to this as well is, this is crazy news. Xbox outsells PlayStation in Japan. That's crazy. That seems impossible, right? But Xbox outsold PlayStation for a week period in Japan last month, and that is wild.
Yeah, that's always what Xbox, it's the one thing they can never achieve, is outdoing Japan. And so the fact that they can add another notch to their belt.
It's pretty cool. I think it's availability, right? And it's the Series S.
Yeah, Series S's are everywhere. You can get them.
They're everywhere, and they're affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're little, small, little cute boxes, which kind of...
And they're good. I mean, they're a really good system. I know they're not as strong as or as powerful as a Series X, but, like, I mean, if you have a 1080p to 4K TV, I mean, it's going to look great. If you're not a crazy person that can recognize fidelity within your in resolution,
I see an 8K, Jared.
You're not gonna really notice it as much.
So
what's the frames that the S gets? I forget. It's not
what?
Does the S get up to 60 frames?
Yeah, I don't remember what. I think it's I think so. It just doesn't do 120, I think, is what it is. I think it does
4K, and it doesn't go
upscale.
Full 4K. Yeah,
it's 4K upscale and 60 frames. So
it's all about the frame rate these days, I think.
I honestly,
I put everything in performance.
I think most people, if they had not dropped a Series X, I think the Series S would be most people's idea of a next gen box.
Like, right.
Most people, not you or I or, you know, the people listening to this probably, but most people who have a video game system that aren't hardcore gamers would probably be like, yeah, this is pretty badass. I like
perfect.
This. This works. I don't even have a TV that does 120 frames per second, so it's okay, right?
Oh. And if you put an antenna on it, it would look like a walkie-talkie.
There we go. Little speaker.
A big speaker.
Yeah, it's a big speaker. Let's shift to our topic of the month. We're talking Tunic. And let's see. This game is kind of an interesting thing. I know it's a little decisive between the three of us. But let's see what the community says. So, Tunic came out March 16th, 2022. It dropped initially on Xbox only. And actually debuted on Game Pass, which was pretty awesome. I know that's what helped me jump into it pretty quick. I was looking forward to this game, actually. This was produced or designed almost entirely by one person, Andrew Shodice. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
impressive.
And published by Finji. The music is composed by Lifeformed, and I point this all out because while there are other people involved with the game, Andrew Shodice and Lifeform did majority of what happened in this game, which is pretty impressive today in today's day. And this game is on Metacritic is an 85 Metascore, 7.8 user score, so it's a little bit less well received on Metacritic than on other sources. And it is now on PlayStation. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be on Switch, and it just seems like the perfect Switch game.
I was gonna say, yeah, this seems like a Nintendo game through and through.
It really does. It's, I mean, they have their Zelda likes already. They have the Zelda game, so. But without further ado, why don't we jump in and talk about Tunic?
And real quickly, I'm looking at it too on IGN, but this is something that was brought up earlier. And IGN says 12 hours for main story, 16 hours story plus side missions, and 22 hours for just everything to platinum. So,
yeah, it's a pretty contained story. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of exposition or anything like that. It's
right.
All told through action and through this really cool. So, why don't we jump into that? I really loved the idea of playing a video game that felt like an old school Nintendo or Super Nintendo game. Back in the day when you played those games, you got like a little guidebook that came with it, and in that guidebook you got little hints and tips on where to go and what to do. Sometimes there was a map. For the original Zelda game, I'm thinking you kind of had open spaces and you kind of filled it in, and it had some basic areas and what to do.
Some had like the ciphers for puzzles within the games.
Yeah. There was a section for notes at the end and all that stuff. So I really liked my voice is cracking. I really liked how that was implemented in this game to kind of bring it back to that old school style. So I don't know. What do other people think about that?
Yeah,
Go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people have compared it to the remake of Link's Awakening, just due to, like, kind of roughly coming out within a couple years, and the art style is it's obviously not the same. This is more like it's isometric, similar. But it's similar. I personally think the Zelda game graphic style is probably a little bit better than this, but obviously that's coming from something made by a team versus right. a game that's made by one person, right? So
this kind of has that it has that chibi style, but it also has that like Wind Waker more cartoony look too than even I would say a Link's Awakening had.
And it's very obvious, and you know, if you were to listen to the developer talk about it, but there's a lot of mashup here between a game like Zelda, and I would go as far to even say Diablo, and it's a mix between Zelda, Diablo, and then Dark Souls. That's essentially what the model of this game is.
I think that's pretty apt. I mean, you look at this game and it screams a little bit Zelda. Like it has a lot of Zelda-like tropes. I mean, you're a little green tunic-wearing character.
Right.
You're walking around. You find a sword that you get to use, and you're exploring these ruins and different areas that kind of look like they could be a Zelda-like area. So it really feels Zelda-esque. And even the tropes in this game, I mean, you're going around collecting things that are Zelda-like, right? You're collecting, you have to do this three-part task.
Mm-hmm. Which is like, very Zelda. Yeah, I mean, right. Very early Zelda, Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time.
Exactly. And then you have to go on and find these other bigger artifacts that are kind of similar to, like, doing the 8 shrines in Ocarina of Time or even Link to the Past, right?
Yeah.
These octagonal things in this game, though, instead of
trying. And then you know, there's several. You bring it up, Souls. There's several things within the game that harken to that. I mean, there's the effigy. There's the almost the save shrines that essentially act like bonfires.
Yeah.
And then the first two objectives of the game are taken directly from Souls, the original Dark Souls, which is ringing the two bells. That's a direct reference to
I didn't realize the original
Dark Souls.
The combat system is kind of grueling in this game, much more so than any Zelda game too, which I think it pulls from more of a Dark Souls world as well.
Right.
I mean,
even it's almost I thought about it too, and some of it. This is a kind of a big leap here, but I could see almost like this being like a translation of a Metroidvania to a top-down Zelda-style game, too. In some respect, you get some traversal items that make moving a little easier, and you kind of open up a few shortcuts and find secret passages and stuff like that. So,
well, even halfway through the game, you lose all your powers and have to start over. Which is a very Metroidvania kind of thing to do. I never really thought of it as a Metroidvania, but you're right. It does really pay homage to that.
That's the same. It's kind of cool. A leap, but you can kind of, if once you kind of throw the idea out there, you can kind of see where I'm going with that.
Oh, absolutely. It's got other Zelda-like tropes in it too that I, you know, kind of harking back to the things that it's really paying homage to. But yeah. Like one of the items you find is like a little lantern, kind of like from A Link to the Past, right? Mm-hmm. The map is very similar to what you would see in a Zelda game too, is right? And even some of these villains, the bad guys, look like the moblins or the characters you'd fight in a Zelda game. So it's just kind of neat how they do that. They have like a wand, one of the weapons is like a wand that you might use in an older Zelda game or something like that too. So it's got a lot of cool little fan servicey kind of things for people who like these other series. But I think this caught Jared by surprise too. You look at this game and you think Zelda and you're like, oh, okay, so I'm just gonna go up, slash this guy a couple times, move on, slash this, you know, you kind of go in head first and aggressive in your combat styles, and you're right. Like, oh, that's fine. That is not this game. You can't just go in.
Yeah, you gotta blazing. Block and evade, which is, you know, a big trope in Dark Souls as well. So
yeah, and that's not, there's some tactical work in Zelda games, but not to the extent of this. Zelda games are not particularly difficult games either in that sense. At least not my experience. I don't know if you've had different experience with that or not, but
no, I mean they try to make those games pretty accessible. I feel like this game, I don't know, I didn't mess around with any like difficulty settings. I'm sure you can probably make it more casual, right?
Yeah, there's a it's got built-in accessibility settings, and so you can like if it's really kicking your butt or something there, and you just want to kind of play it more for the story and the discovery aspect, which albeit it has a lot
not,
of.
Albeit there's not really a whole lot of story.
No, but you know there's a lot to discover, and it can be kind of fun in that aspect. You can turn on the accessibilities, which makes it you can't die, the no fail run, and you can't run out of stamina, which basically makes the game very easy to play through.
Yeah.
What do we think about, we talked a little bit about the art style, what do we think about the art style?
Jared.
Oh, well, hey, real quickly, I want to go back to the original question with the language in the book and the how I felt about that.
Okay. Bounce off that.
I appreciate the effort into it, and I understand what they were trying to do, but I think having the booklet being digitized on the screen didn't give me the same nostalgic feels that they were kind of going for. And again, I give them an A for effort, but I just hate reading stuff on screens like that. And that gimmick just didn't work for me just because it's not my kind of game. Like the last Zelda game I played was Wind Waker, I think. Or no, it was Twilight Princess. So okay. It's been a very long time.
They speak in Hylian in that game, Jared.
But there's
I'm joking.
They don't require me to translate it into Orbesh and then translate it back into English and stuff. So
see, I like the language thing is cool. I get what you're saying. Like, it's not you can't just look at the book and then understand what they're saying. Right. But you don't actually have to translate any of it. Like, you just it tells you what you need to know in at the moment you have that.
It's the fact that in order to truly play the game and get the full experience, you have to go into the menu, look through stuff, and then go back to the game. To me, that stops the action for me, and I don't like it.
Yeah, and I get that because it does require a lot of back and forth. And you have to peruse those pretty deeply too. It's really easy to get yourself into an area that will kick your butt if you're not paying attention to where it's telling you to go. It's really easy to go to the wrong place, right? It's again, it's like an old school NES or a Super NES video game where it's not truly open world, but the whole game is open, so you can kind of go pretty much anywhere. And if you go to the end world stuff, you're going to have a bad time, right? If you're not ready.
And I think if you put that kind of like shtick into a genre that I'm more invested in, I might care to take the time to invest in it. But the fact that I don't play this style of game at all.
Yeah.
For the most part, or this art style of game, the top down hack and, or I guess it's not hack and slash, but you know what I mean.
It's pretty close to hack and slash.
But it's just not my jam. Yeah. Like, I just don't do it. And so you add in another thing that I find kind of tedious, and it's just not something that was really enjoyable. So I clocked about 2 hours into the game, but I didn't feel like nerfing it or anything like that. I think I got out of it what I needed. And it's a very charming game. It's beautifully made, and the fact that it's a developer and a composer is crazy. So hats off to them. It's just they made a painting that I don't particularly like.
I would love, kind of talking about having physical versus non-physical, I as kind of a collectible, I think it'd be really cool to be able to order a physical version of the game booklet. I think
they'll
that would be so
that.
Cool.
Yeah, that would be perfect. I bet they'll probably do that.
Or I wonder if like somebody...
Order like an old school game sleeve, like the whole package. Like you'd get the... Without the game in it, obviously, because you don't need it, but...
Was there a physical release for this?
There was not, but that's what I was going to say. I wonder if limited run games will do something.
Yeah,
they tend
I would
to
imagine.
Do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you can charge an extra cool $30 for something like that for the folks that really love it and just make a limited release for it.
Yeah, I think it'd be... I wouldn't be surprised if I saw a limited release for this with the booklet included. Now,
but no,
I
used to
away
play
some
PC
of the game
games
style,
with my brother
though.
Like this, though. Like, Prince of Persia, the old school Prince of Persia game,
yeah.
They required the book, and I remember at one point we had acquired Prince of Persia, and we didn't necessarily have the book, and we got to the point where we just couldn't proceed, and then we actually had the book, and it made all the difference. So, like, it definitely, that concept brought back some really nice memories, but it just didn't land for me in this iteration.
Yeah, I can see that. One thing I like about this game, shifting a little bit, is you basically have the ability to do a lot of things from the very get-go. Some examples are you can teleport from the very beginning of the game. Hmm. You just don't know how to do that. And it's simple. You hold down this button on one of these big golden pads, and it brings you to the teleporting world. Cool.
Yeah.
Or you can. They have these big tower thingies that, if you hold down the A button, they power up and they turn on the like little purple liquid stuff that runs through it. It actually reminds me of like Covenant plasma kind of stuff.
There's also, there's a lot of hidden features that the game doesn't tell you for like a speedrunning purpose. Like just kind of items hidden randomly around the world that you would not get potentially at that time. If you're playing actually through how the intended developer main first playthrough would be. Yeah. They said that I was watching a little video of someone trying to do a speed run of the game where both the composer and dev were talking about it, and they're like, it's nice to see people taking advantage of some things that are hidden in the game, which I was just like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm watching a speed run actually right now where somebody beats it in 24 minutes.
Dang.
And I mean. He's taking advantage of things that are built in, right? Like, he's taking the shortcuts, he's finding the other location where the sword's hidden, and he's not doing any extra stuff. But he's also... And he's doing things out of order, too.
Yeah.
But he's also... Some cool things that are built in, too, is... Well, kind of built in, is you can cheese certain things. Like, there's a really, really difficult boss later in the game that I spent way too long fighting.
Which one?
It's the one when you go into the quarry and then you go underground.
Oh, is it the siege engine?
No, it's the guy with the shotgun thing.
The librarian?
No, later than that. It's further
the
in than that.
The boss scavenger?
Hold on, let me look at the name. Tunic bosses. Let me see what they're called.
Yeah, it's
list
the
of all bosses.
It's the boss scavenger. Yeah.
Let me look at him. Oh, no. It must be that one because the next one's the heir.
Yeah.
God, the fucking air. Oh, that that battle. Yeah, it's the boss scavenger. But I had a difficult time with boss scavenger, and I didn't know. I just watched him do this. But if you don't, start to go across the bridge, but then come back, and then you can lock yourself over, and the bridge falls, and he's stuck over on one side, and you're stuck on the other side. And if he comes too close to the edge, you can use your little whip-like thing to pull him across into the gap, and he dies. And then you're teleported over and can grab your little thing you need to, the little octagonal thing you need to.
Yeah, the little like screw gem or the screw key to get the gem.
So it's just interesting all the different things you can do with this game. I mean, 24 minutes to beat any game is pretty crazy, but this game is. I love that kind of stuff is built into this game and available. And That kind of, I want to shift off a little bit too, and then we can talk a little bit about what the community thinks about this game as well. But I love some of the built-in secret things that you can solve in this game. Things that you don't need to do in order to beat the game. I don't know if Josh or Jared...
A lot of them, are you talking about like the directional puzzles?
Yeah. The golden path?
Yeah.
I think is what it's called.
There's that. There's also just random spots where they've got like flowers or like rocks kind of just sitting out, and you have to I think it has something to do with the instruction booklet.
Yeah.
But I think you will see a hint in there for a certain place on the actual map, and then you'll go and follow a specific directional route toward like a group of flowers with your D-pad or your or like some rocks back and forth, and a treasure will appear.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so cool. And then there's one, if you do the golden path, like there's a series of things put together, and you do all of it together.
Mm-hmm.
It leads you to this area, which is hidden in the game that you can't get to otherwise. And then it gives you a website to go to, which is kind of cool. And I did this back a few months ago, so I don't remember.
Is it a family friendly website?
Yeah. Nothing like that. But yeah, it's got a dark really cool Easter egg thing built into it that, you know, new games. It's a Kojima like thing to do. Bring it back to the meta, right? And I just watched this speedrunner beat the librarian without ever actually fighting him, and it was kind of cool. Wow, this would have made the game so much easier. I should have watched the speedrun first, huh? Anywho. Talking about the difficulty curve in this game, Josh, what did you think about the difficulty in the fighting as someone who has played a lot of Dark Souls games?
Sorry, yawn there.
That was too difficult.
What?
Just kidding.
Oh. I mean, there's a learning curve to it. I think, obviously you just have to, once you kind of learn, you can, okay, I have to probably dodge a lot or shield a lot. You just look for the openings. If there's anything that, you know, people with Souls experience or trained to do, it's look for either an attack pattern or opening or both, you know, and then use that to your advantage. It's a little bit more difficult if you're running around in a dark cave and you just happen to aggro like 15 enemies like that. You kind of just have to like approach it from like a zombie's perspective, where you round them up and kind of go back and attack them one at a time until the mob kind of dwindles down.
Out, yeah. There were times in this game that, you know, to your point, the bosses, the fights, they're all pretty routine based. Like, they follow patterns, and you can figure out those patterns. They're not ridiculously hard to figure out, which again pulls it back to, this is like an old school NES game where the bosses, the fights weren't overly complex, and there weren't like a ton of different things that they were programmed to do.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see if they maybe do like a DLC with this where and maybe add like a boss rush mode and or like a pit of trials sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which they have like a mini one of those, I think, built into the game, but it's
they do.
But it's not like it's like maybe like 5 rounds or something like that.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, I think. Six or seven. And it's like because you're in this one area where you have to unleash the different stones, effigies, yeah, basically, and something will come out of each one and you have to fight that group of enemies or that previous boss or something like that. Why don't we turn to the listeners, I guess the community, and see what the community is saying. So I posted on Reddit a few weeks ago just that we were going to do this game and was interested in what people were thinking. Let me pull that up. Talks amongst yourselves while I pull this up.
So in Tunic, the main character wears a tunic.
What do you think of the fox character?
The fox character is a fox that wears a tunic.
He does.
I
thought he was charming.
I don't know. I don't really have too much of a. There's not a whole lot of like development from a character standpoint. So right. It's more just like, do I like the model? I don't know.
I was gonna say the model was cute.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see where it could, you know, pull maybe younger kids into play like that. And, you know, they may find themselves learning how to get good at a somewhat challenging game.
They could sell Tunic plushes.
Yeah, or Amiibos. Love Tunic, you know, plush. That's another thing for Nintendo. I feel like that's a no-brainer, like why this could come to the Switch. They could just sell some pretty pretty nice Amiibos.
I think it'd be cool to have a Tunic plush. I am not really into the whole cutesy thing, so initially that was kind of a turnoff for me when I saw the fox thing, and it was very, very short-lived. I actually adore the character now, and I'm a big fan of him. Is his name Tunic? Is that what his name is, or is he just because he's called a tunic? What's his?
Because he's wearing one.
It's because he's wearing a tunic?
Most of the game happens in a tunic.
To be quite clear, about 99% of it.
the other thing is, too, can we talk about that shopkeeper a little bit? What is his story?
Oh, like the disembodied, like, skeleton thing?
Yeah, that thing is terrifying and cool at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have an answer, but certainly go and buy a lot of bombs there.
So I'm going to jump in and pull a few comments from folks who've played this game on the Reddit forum here. So 12_3_Seahawks_3_12. So much easier to say real names sometimes.
Hashtagging back and slash and forth the third.
So this back person says, as soon as I heard about what this game was going to be, I knew it would skyrocket to my favorite game once I played it for myself. And it certainly delivered. Every bullet point description you could make about the game, it fits perfectly with what I love about gaming, almost to the point where it seemed like the game was made for me. The art style and character design is wonderful. The 2D Zelda-esque gameplay feels incredible. Combat was difficult but perfectly fit between fair and firm. Level design and secrets were amazing to traverse and find. The puzzles made me feel like a genius. I genuinely have nothing negative to say about the game, with maybe the exception of the inventory system making it difficult to try out different weapon combinations, but that's a minor gripe. So, you know, what do we think about what Seahawks is saying here?
I appreciate what he said when he felt like the game was made for him, and I've had that experience before, and that's such a cool feeling when you find a game that just checks all of those boxes and just feels so natural for you to play. So I think that's awesome.
I it's really cool to see to have that experience. I did not feel like this game was made for me, but I felt like it was pretty close to made for me, which was fun experience about this.
Yeah.
Josh, any thoughts on the combat being fair but firm?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a learning curve, as you had mentioned previously. I don't think that it's, you know, anything that's too difficult, especially coming from, you know, something that was inspired by a Souls game. I think it's still accessible in that standpoint.
I kind of felt, I agree that it felt fair and firm, but firm. There were points in the game where I felt like I wanted to rip my hair out because I had to fight this one boss like 16,000 times. For example, the fight with the heir at the end and the boss Scrapper, those fights took me quite some time to beat. And I never felt like the game was cheap in any of those points. And I always, there were points where I was doing things. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm doing better here. I almost got him that time. Oh, one more hit and I would have beaten him. I felt like I was learning and getting better each time, which is kind of what I'm hoping for when I play a game like this. So that, it never felt like I was getting beaten because the game was put together poorly or unfair. And that is a good experience for me. I always felt like it gave me just enough that I wanted to play it again, even though I had just gotten beat by this boss 15 times in a row. The puzzles, you know, what did you think of the puzzles, guys?
I mean, I didn't deal with too many of them.
Jared was puzzled out.
I was puzzled out.
He is puzzled by the puzzles.
Yeah, I mean, they're not traditional, I guess Zelda-style puzzles. I think a lot of it, as we've kind of talked about at the start, I think anything that involved, like, reading to kind of answer, figure out a puzzle may not have been initially clear because of the cryptic language that is in the game that you can't read. So that, I feel like they set up a barrier where probably that led to maybe more time being spent to solve some puzzles than otherwise would.
Yeah, there's definitely a level of depth, right? Where you have your first layer, that's the stuff it just kind of gives you. It's not super hard to figure out. Then you have a next layer where you have to put in a little bit effort. You have to look at the pages a little deeper. You have to kind of walk around and discover some things. And I think these are the kind of puzzles where our commenter is feeling like a genius, because it's not given to you, and you can solve these puzzles. They're solvable. And then there's a deep layer, and these are like the golden path where you have to really be invested to solve this puzzle, and you're going to feel super smart if you finish this puzzle, but it's not given to you, and a lot of the tools, that while they're available in the game, they're not just easily accessible, right? Like the language, for example. There are another one of the commenters mentioned that they were actually enjoyed decoding the language, and they helped other people decode it. And I didn't know this, but apparently the language is a script of English phonemes. So it was kind of interesting how people were able, I'm not surprised people were able to solve that. And the fact that they did was kind of cool, right? So being able to do a little more in-depth puzzling, I guess, to figure stuff out like that was, you know, kind of a cool addition to this game, that it had those layers. You didn't have to do that to get enjoyment out of this game or to beat this game. And if you did, you got a lot out of it, right? Any last minute thoughts before we give our final reviews, final verdicts on this game?
Negative.
Not really. I mean, I don't see it as a game of the year necessarily, but it's a really good game.
I put this one in my indie game of the year content.
Yeah, contenders.
Yeah. It's definitely maybe my most enjoyable game this year.
Yeah.
Thus far, I don't know. There's a few other contenders in there, but I really, really like this game for what it was, and I'm a big fan of how contained it was. Like, mm-hmm. we've had this discussion before, and I think of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, right? Where a game does not need to be 130 hours long for me to feel like I have enough value in it.
Right.
So having a good 12-hour game that's enjoyable, engaging, I think is really what I wanted, and that's what this gave me. Let's shift to what else we've been playing. Jared, you've been a little more quiet today. Why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
Well, there's one big one, but I'll talk about that next time because I want to get more options done in there. But probably the most enjoyable what I've been playing was Bioshock Infinite. I actually forgot to talk about this the last time around, but I purchased all three remasters on Xbox for like $10 a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I flew through 1 and 2, which Bioshock 1 is one of my favorite games ever. And then Bioshock 2, I was able to play through that. And before, I had my opinions on it, but I really enjoyed this time around. And I had never played the DLC for 2, which was freaking awesome. Probably one of the best game DLCs I've ever played. But after that, I tried to jump straight into Infinite, and I was like, I can't do this. And so I took a few months off, went back into Infinite, and really went through the game and appreciated it on its own, aside from the other two. And that is a beautiful game, guys. Like, it is... The art style is awesome. The relationship between Booker and Elizabeth is really cool. The twist is a little contrived, I get, in Infinite compared to, like, the one from Bioshock 1. But at the same time, I really appreciated that. And it's still a very positive but sad ending. And even in the sense to where you end the cycle to get rid of Booker when he dies at the end. But that also gets rid of Elizabeth, which is really unfortunate, too. And so in order to end this whole pain, or this cycle of like pain and conflict, they both had to go. And I don't know. I'm really excited and a little scared for what Bioshock 4 is going to bring after going through that. So like, I would like to see more Rapture, but at the same time, after playing Infinite again, Columbia was really enjoyable this time around. And it had its own nuances, and the districts within Columbia were really cool, and I felt like Columbia was more directly related to the United States at that time versus Rapture. Which Rapture, you got some notes of that.
Yeah.
But Columbia, it was more in your face for obvious reasons.
That's one of my favorite things about those games is the throwback to like this different era. Mm-hmm. And playing through in this different era is so cool.
But what I like about it though is they're throwbacks to eras that people like to wax poetic about, and like they like to romanticize. But yeah, the 20s were cool for a lot of people, but there was these people in the 20s sucked. And these games, right when you kind of feel the nostalgia of the period, then you hear a holotape or you see an entire district of people with no sunlight and they're all black. And you realize that the cost of this paradise is it's at the peril of others. And it's kind of like the movie Metropolis, more so within Bioshock Infinite than anything, where you had like the Metropolis up top and then you had all the workers below. But I'm very glad I went back into it, and it was one of the most enjoyable Bioshock playthroughs I've had, just because I went into it with an open mind and previously I had not liked that game very much. So I'm finding as I get older, I'm going back and playing games like that and appreciating them more.
Taste change, right?
Yeah. No, for sure.
Do you look
for things in games too, right?
Do you guys go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say I don't skip through dialogue as much as I typically used to and stuff. Like I try to really go into it, and and dig into the background lore, which I think is a lot more interesting with games now too.
I was going to ask, do you guys think they go back, we revisit one of those two locations in Bioshock 4, or do you think they go somewhere new?
It depends on the time period, because all the Bioshocks are, I think, so in Bioshock Infinite, one of the DLCs takes place in Rapture during the height of Rapture. So you get to see Rapture as Rapture when it was roaring. I think Bioshock 2 takes place like 10 years after Rapture fell. So I think it takes place in like the 60s. And I think Bioshock 2 takes place in like the 70s, I think. So it really depends on the time period, and it depends on the social commentary, if they're going to continue that trend, which they probably will, because it's 2K games and that's just what they do. It just depends on the time period and what they're trying to say. Do we want to see a more like a Rapture 1 year out after the fall? I think that would be really cool, to where there's still some polish to it, but you're still seeing the degradation of it. I don't think we can go back to Columbia. And I don't even think that this can be another Booker story, because he did.
Yeah.
Unless it's a prequel. And he's not even dead. He just doesn't exist.
They did an interesting thing with the Bioshock Burial at Sea, which just put us back in Rapture at the height of Rapture.
Well, right? That's what I was talking about, yeah.
And that would be cool to see another experience in the height of Rapture.
But the problem with that, though, and with the Burial at Sea DLC versus the actual gameplay of Bioshock, is the Atom was still experimental, not really known about. And the Little Sisters weren't really common knowledge during Burial at Sea. Like, there was rumors about what they did and who they were.
Yeah.
And that's what the first Burial at Sea is about discovering what the Little Sisters actually are, because one of Booker, like the girl he's looking for, turns into one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's enough information available to us, unless it's like a behind the scenes thing where some dude's preventing the fall of Rapture. Maybe that could be a cool story, where you work for Ryan and you're trying to stop all the splicers and stuff.
I bet they go to some new.
But I don't know what else you can do with it. I mean, there could be a space thing.
I was thinking like a moon, like 1960s, 1950s moon landing, moon base kind of thing, 1970s.
But they also, I think, are going to wait to see what that – it's coming to Game Pass, and it's a Soviet-looking Bioshock game. I forget what it's called. And while whoever next talks, I'll look that up. But I think they're going to wait to see what that does, because that looks like a spiritual successor to these games.
Okay. I'll check that game out then.
It looks incredible. The graphics look crazy. I'll look that up while you guys keep going.
Josh, what have you been playing?
I have been playing... What is that?
It's called Atomic Heart.
Atomic Heart?
Yeah. So look that up. Look up trailers of it. It looks incredible.
I've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. I'm probably going to beat that today. There's 17 chapters. I'm in chapter 17 right now, so that's why I'm assuming I'm going to beat it today. But it's a re-release of a Nintendo Wii cult classic, I guess you could call it, that kind of launched a new JRPG for Nintendo and by Monolith Soft, and they've got number 3 coming out at the end of July, almost a little over 3 weeks away. I have never played the first one. It's a very good story. Combat is, it reminds me, you know, graphically and I guess premise wise of Final Fantasy 12. I think the combat itself is kind of more of that MMO kind of move around and turn-based kind of time, active time related battle like you would have in Final Fantasy 12. There's good character development, good story so far, so I think I'm interested to play the third one. I own the second one, and I've never beaten it, but I'll probably beat that and play it before I get the third one here toward the end of the month or maybe even next month. But, yeah, it's a good story, a good game, and pretty much it. I'd recommend you trying to play it, Alex, whenever you have time. I have the hard copy, so
okay.
I've got the... Yeah, so I could let you borrow the cartridge.
I have always been intrigued by Xenoblade, but I've never played any of them. So
it's a lot of British, Irish, and Scottish accents.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I've heard people talk about this is a game that they often will turn off the voice acting or switch to Japanese if possible. I don't tend to do that. I tend to just play it with the way that it's
set up. I don't mind
it.
But, you know, it's interesting. The new one. Apparently, so Xenoblade Chronicles 3, it's came out that they will have different, syncing for different languages.
Yeah.
For whichever version you buy. So, the mouth movements should match up pretty closely to each language.
Well, I'll have to check those out. One of the things that's prevented me from jumping into those is Final Fantasies are long games, right? They're JRPGs are long, but they tend to be about 40, 45 hours to beat a game. Xenoblade, those are long games from what
I mean, the story, so yeah, they ballpark that the story will take you about 100 hours to complete. Yeah. But
that's a big commitment.
I'm coming in. I'm at about 70 right now, and okay. I think it'll probably be around 75. And I think probably 100, maybe a little bit more to 100% complete it. And some people say like 150 to 100% complete it, but I don't know. I don't think it's gonna take that long.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Maybe if you like, struggle through combat, I don't know.
And that's one of the. So I've been playing. This isn't the game I was going to talk about, but I'll mention this real quick. Because I've been playing Dragon Quest XI still. I rolled credits on the game, and I mentioned that maybe last month, maybe. But there's a post game stuff that happens, and the real ending. And I have been grinding to get to that, and I'm probably 80 or 90 hours in that game. And it's like, okay, this is a very good game, enjoyable, but God, I don't want to play 90, 100 hours of the same game. You know, there's too many games out there for me to spend that much time in a one game.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of struggling with that a little bit in that game. But it's a fantastic game, don't get me wrong. I've been playing... Because I bounced off of that a little bit and have a little bit of long game fatigue, I went on Game Pass and looked for some other games and found 12 Minutes.
That's a good one.
It's a fantastic game. And I don't want to – I won't delve too much into it because the story will lead to spoilers. And I think kind of like the Forgotten City, it's best to go in as blind as possible.
Just know the voice acting in 12 Minutes is exceptional.
It is very, very good.
You got James McAvoy. You have Willem Dafoe.
Uh-huh.
I forget who the wife is, but...
Yeah, I forgot, too, which is a shame.
But it's striking voice acting in that game.
The voice acting is great. The game was really cool, and it's like an old-school point-and-click adventure you might play on a computer. It feels like a computer game.
Right. But you can get through it in an evening easily, like lot of different options.
I think that's been you can 3 hours.
Yeah, you can discover your way through. You don't even have to cheat it.
I think I spent 3 hours and 3 or 4 hours, and I got all 7 endings.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I did not like about this game, the only thing is they use one voice actor for two different characters.
Oh.
And I'm like, why is that character got the same voice? And it bothered me a lot. And maybe there's a reason behind that. If I dug deeper, there's some lore in there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the game's story gets really twisted and dark in the middle.
Oh, it gets messed up, yeah.
It gets very messed up. But it's a super fun game. Like you said, very well acted, very contained. Good.
Can't
weekend.
Forget Ninja Turtles, by the way. Let's say a little bit about that before we
and
go.
And let's jump into the favorite game I've played recently. Jared and I jumped in and played the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge online on Xbox a week or so ago. Do you want to start us off with that one?
That game was a digital palate cleanse for me.
Oh, yeah.
It gave me everything I wanted from an old school game like that. It wasn't too hard. Like, if I played through it by myself, I probably would have struggled a lot more, of course. Even if we would have had young Josh there, it probably would have been a little bit easier for us too. Maybe we can try again.
We should play it again.
But it was short. It was sweet. It was nostalgic. It feels literally like an old school arcade Fox game, right?
Yeah.
Except it's not. They completely made a new game. The music in it is awesome. Animation is smooth. It's so simple, but it's so perfect.
It looks great. It plays great. It's short, sweet, to the point, and it's got tons of replayability. If for folks out there, if you've ever played the old arcade Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games, my favorite growing up was Turtles in Time. It's that game, but with updated mechanics, most of the same mechanics, but some updated additional things, a new story, new levels. It's got an overworld like the original Nintendo game. But don't worry, you don't have to do anything. You just kind of go to level in that.
Mm-hmm.
It is super enjoyable, and it was so much fun to be able to play arcade style, but remotely.
Right. That was so much fun.
So I look forward to jumping back into that game, and I think it's on Game Pass. So if you have Game Pass, there's no reason not to play this game. Spend a few hours in it. You'll have a good time.
I mean, we got through it in two and a half hours.
Two and a half hours, 3 hours, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
It's a brawler, so if you don't like brawlers,
beat them up.
But also keep in mind, if you don't like brawlers, because I typically don't like playing them solo, but the fact that Alex and I were there talking and strategizing and splitting the efforts and stuff, it was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Why don't we jump into video game Guess Who? So this week, in honor of Final Fantasy VII's big news, we're going to do a character from Final Fantasy VII, and we're going to make it extra difficult on Jared because he's never played these games.
I played 15 for like 40 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't impact what...
It doesn't impact this game at all. So, Josh, you might be carrying the team here. And I have picked a character now.
All right, well, I'll start. I'll just ask probably the most definitive question to figure out what character it could be. Like, you'll know the answer if you say yes to this. Does this character have a gun for an arm?
No.
Okay.
Too specific.
Actually, that's lazy. I'm not gonna do that. Does this character run around with a massive sword?
No.
Is this character of a canine species?
No.
Does this character's fate in this game not match the fate in the original game?
No.
Okay.
Well, and that's kind of a loaded question, too, because we don't necessarily know.
He knows who I was asking about, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Let's see. Is this character a member of the Turks?
No.
Okay.
Is this character related to the main character?
No.
Come on, Josh.
Is this character a villain?
Yes.
Okay. Or I guess antagonist is probably a better way to phrase it.
So does this character have the same name as a crazy Roman emperor?
No.
Okay.
What is that? Was that Shinra?
Nero the Sable.
Oh, okay. Nero?
He's a dude with big black goth wings. I don't know.
He's one of the...
Okay. Yeah. That's not necessarily the original Final Fantasy, but...
I thought we were doing remake.
Well, he's not in the main, in the lore of the video game. He's extended.
Oh, gotcha.
Is what he was referring to, but that's fine.
Is this person... does this person share... is their last name the same name of a corporation or company? Okay.
No. Is this person's last name the name of a fruit?
No.
All right.
What was that?
I know who he's talking about. But
Jesse
that's
a... and something. Oh, okay. Raspberry.
Okay. Yeah, I know who he's talking about.
See, are we... okay, maybe we need to clarify, but we're talking, like, original Final Fantasy VII.
I know,
or are we talking, like, remake?
We're talking remake, because Alex wanted me to be able to see real characters as opposed to little polygon blobs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, because I'm like, well, okay. I mean, that
Josh,
could be...
as a hint, it doesn't matter in this case.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see.
I actually thought... okay.
You thought we would have had it by now?
you would have had it by now.
Is this person, technically, yeah, a former soldier, I guess?
No.
Okay.
Does this character have very long, beautiful hair and a dude?
I already asked. Who that would be, Jared, if you're thinking of Sephiroth.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
I know you didn't know. I was just trying to be cryptic.
Here, is the character a female?
No.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Josh.
I think I know. Is this character technically the biological father of Sephiroth?
No.
Does this character's last name make you want... or something to do with this character's name make you want chocolate?
No.
Okay. So that eliminates Bill and Sam.
And we're... okay, we're talking remake. Okay.
You know this is not a woman. You know it's a villain.
Yeah, it's... I'm thinking it's the... I mean, what's his title?
Does this character look like a creepy goth priest?
No, that's...
No.
No.
It's not a villain.
I just assumed because he looked like a creepy goth priest.
He does.
Hey, will you let me... think?
I'm trying to get through this because I had to use the bathroom.
Yeah. So it's I don't know I'm not gonna name him right now, but are they the head? Are they essentially the head of Shinra Public Security Forces?
No.
No. So it's not Heidegger.
No, it's not Heidegger.
Does this character's name resemble a mob boss?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Do it, Josh.
I wasn't expecting...
Do it. Just say the name.
It would be more like comic relief than...
It's Don Corneo.
Yeah.
Or Corneo or whatever.
It is Don Corneo.
Yeah.
There you go.
He's not really a... I mean, he's not a nice guy, but he's not like
a... pretty villainous dude. I mean, he does later try to, do bad things to women, so...
Or people dressed as women.
He's... yeah. With that, we're gonna go ahead and walk on out of here.
What are we doing next?
Where are we walking to?
Well, wherever you want, Josh. You have legs. So next month we will. Well, I guess this month we'll go ahead and do Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's on Game Pass.
And that's on Game Pass. Go play that, and we'll see how that goes. We'll have a discussion about that one. Remember, if you like us, leave us a review, give us 5 stars, a thumbs up. Listen to us wherever podcasts are available. Tell your friends. Please share us. Hey, we want to hear from you as well. We love talking video games, and that means with other people, as many people as we can get a hold of. We'll keep doing some of the posts on Reddit just to get some more conversation going, because you know that's kind of the point of this podcast, is it's a discussion forum. And you know, if you've got Twitter, hit us up on pod_win. If you don't like Twitter, you don't like social media, you can message us on Google, on Gmail, through...
I thought you were going to say seek counseling. That's
seek
what I
counseling.
Thought you were going
to
say.
No. You can message us through the good old-fashioned email on our Gmail, which is play2winpod@gmail.com. And again, we are everywhere at play2win, where podcasts can be found. And with that, we are out, folks.
Toodles.
Bye.